You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
And it's another edition of MLB.com Extras, the National League Central edition, where this week we learn how to use stats to salve ego wounds, learn about the shuffling roster in Chicago for some reason, a need for a leadoff hitter in St. Louis, and who in the world is going to play shortstop in Pittsburgh. That and plenty more in this week's edition, MLB.com Extras, National League Central. Well, Jen, let's see. Where do we start with this one? I think last time we spoke, the Cardinals had come off a big weekend against the Pirates and, you know, all extra inning games, all walk-off wins, very exciting stuff. That actually might have been a little further back, but the bottom line is there have been concerns about the bullpen just hanging in there. I mean, just holding up. And I see, you know, more extra innings games this last weekend. How are the arms holding up?
They're holding on. You know, right now the Cardinals are actually using a 9-man bullpen, which is very unconventional, but something that we've already seen them do sporadically throughout this stretch. I mean, this is a team that's still in the middle of playing 36 games in 37 days. They have just over a week left until they get their next off day. So a little bit of roster finagling here and there has allowed them to keep, you know, in this case, basically two extra arms in the bullpen. And really, since the end of April, they've had at least 8 relievers. And, you know, it's kind of a combination of two things. Number one, the bullpen being overworked. You look at, again, the stretch of 36 games in 37 days. So far during that stretch, no team in the majors has thrown more innings from their relievers than the Cardinals. So there's certainly something being overworked there. But, you know, manager Mike Matheny has also been very aggressive in how he's deployed those arms. So in order to continue to have that flexibility, he needs to have more options. So, you know, the Cardinals have been craving some deeper starts from their rotation. They got one Sunday night from Lance Lynn. They actually got one Monday night from John Lackey, only to see the game go 14 innings. So the bullpen had to pick up about 7 innings anyways. But innings are going to continue to be key, and I would expect to see the Cardinals keep at least one extra reliever for at least the next 8 days.
It is amazing when you get in these stretches and then, you know, you get those great starts and, oh, yeah, well, the game's going to go 14, 15, 16 innings. You just think, yeah, I can't win for losing. I mean, that's got to be just so absolutely frustrating for Mike Matheny and company.
Yeah, it does. You know, and you look at the way that John Lackey's, you know, outing kind of unfolded on Monday. I mean, he was in position to throw a complete game, no doubt. I mean, he finished 7 innings on 76 pitches, faced just one over the minimum. Problem was that one over the minimum scored. Cardinals were down 1-0 when his spot came up in the 8th inning, and at that point, you've got to play for a run. You've got to play to tie the game. It does no good if he pitches the distance if you can't score for him. So they had to yank him and go to the bullpen at that point. And then, as you mentioned, it ends up going 14 innings. So, you know, it's certainly set up to kind of be a night off for the bullpen. It wasn't. The key now is to get deeper starts from both Michael Walker and particularly Carlos Martinez. I mean, he is a guy who had a very good start to the month of April. You know, this month has been a little bit rocky for him. The Cardinals are going to need him to go deeper because, you know, and you look at his short starts coupled with the short starts that they've gotten from Adam Wainwright's replacement, it's just really taken a lot out of that bullpen. And while the bullpen has been tremendous, you know, to this point in being able to shoulder it, you do wonder down the road when it's going to catch up to that group.
Oh, and I think we all know that it will, right? I mean, it's almost impossible for that not to become an issue at some point. But the good news is, I guess, that the silver lining this last week was the news regarding Jaime Garcia. And as I understand it, reading your stuff, we're just perhaps a matter of days away from him rejoining the rotation.
Yeah, you know, he's the next guy up to try to fill that rotation gap. So he will get the start Thursday against the Mets. You know, a couple of things there. He looked really good from what I was told in his 2 rehab starts, one with AAA Memphis, one with AA Springfield on his way back from shoulder surgery. But number two, the Cardinals just need somebody that can, again, not only just give them innings, but be effective from that 5th spot. You know, we've seen Tim Cooney give it a try. That didn't work. We saw Tyler Lyons get 3 starts. That didn't work out all that well. So, you know, Jaime Garcia is the guy that the Cardinals had hoped all along would fit in this rotation. And he's a fascinating case because when he's been healthy, he has been very, very good. You know, you could argue in 2011, 2012, he was one of the better left-handed starters in the league. That being said, the last 2 years, the Cardinals have only gotten 16 starts from him. He's been hurt constantly. And so, you know, right now the question really is, can he stay healthy and what can the Cardinals get out of him? So they have Jaime going now. They have Marco Gonzalez getting healthy down in AAA. If the Cardinals can't get enough from one or potentially both of those guys, then they're going to have to go out looking for a starting pitcher on the trade market. So what Jaime can do is going to be key to this team again. If they're looking for a way to kind of fill that hole left by Adam Wainwright, they hope that Jaime can start.
Now, I don't think anybody's shedding any tears over the plight of the St. Louis Cardinals, at least not in the National League Central Division. 25-13, still 12 games over. It was a rocky week for the team. But they do have, as you point out, some concerns. And offensively, while I look at the numbers, you know, and I see some consistency around the lineup. I see a lot of high on base percentages and pretty decent slugging percentages. There's still, a real issue with that leadoff spot. And how do you see that thing playing out here, let's say, in the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, I mean, right now it looks as if the Cardinals are just going to try to tread water until John Jay comes off the DL, which they hope will be that final week in May. I mean, he's been on there with a left wrist injury, is doing some baseball activity, so the hope is that he can come off soon. But, you know, it's a little bit of a conundrum for the Cardinals, who have had the best leadoff hitter the last 2 years, you know, in baseball, in Matt Carpenter. That being said, when you watch the production, especially the increase in home runs, the extra base hits, the power that Carpenter has shown this year, Cardinals really like the look of that in the number two spot. They move him down there. It was about late April. Had a really good start with that again with John Jay filling that leadoff spot. Since then, however, John Jay goes down and the Cardinals have had a really hard time finding anybody they can get on base ahead of Matt Carpenter. You know, obviously the whole point of putting him down in that number two hole is so that he can drive in runs. Well, to drive in runs, you have to have somebody on base in front of you, and that's been a real chore for the Cardinals. They've given Colton Wong a couple of chances, Peter Borges. We even saw Jason Hayward and Randall Grichuk up there. So it looks like for about the next week or so, the Cardinals are going to try to mix and match, try to play the hot hand if there is one, look at matchups, and just see what they can get out of that number one spot until they can get John Jay back, and then they hope that he can fit it as he has in the past. They really don't want to move Matt Carpenter out of that number two hole. It would be an option if they continue to get nothing from that leadoff spot, but their preference will be to keep him hitting second.
Well, as they work on that piece of it, you mentioned earlier the schedule, you know, 36 games, 37 days. I mean, everybody gets these stretches every now and then, but it is a tough one for this team right now. On the road, and, you know, I mean, it's raining all over the country, right? Various spots around the country, people getting deluged with rain. And I'm sure that they would just love nothing more than to get a rain out here or there. But, and, you know, with a short bench, that Matheny has going as well. Are there concerns with giving any of those guys a breather here and there, you know, in the lineup every day?
Yeah, I mean, you bring up rain. They would welcome a rain out, certainly. And it's kind of funny because the one rain out that they had was the first week of the season in Chicago, when that was the last thing they wanted because they already had four off days in the first 2 weeks of the season. But, yeah, they have been playing with a short bench since April. You know, Mike Matheny has been very deliberate the last few weeks in trying to give his starting position players days off. You know, a lot of that, I think, came to light with Matt Carpenter's recent issue with fatigue and just the fact that this is a tough stretch for these players, and sometimes there is a propensity to overwork or to try to do too much. So as a result, the bench players have been getting pretty good involvement. We really haven't seen the short bench come into play in terms of being a deterrent for this team until that extra inning game with the Mets, when they ran out of players pretty early and, you know, at one point had to send up a reliever to hit for himself. But to this point, have been able to kind of manage through that pretty well. But I would expect to continue to see days off for the starters. You know, Matheny's also getting creative in terms of giving later report times for these players. I mean, we had a game over the weekend, a 7 o'clock start time, where players were told not to report till 5:30. So just canceling batting practice, doing whatever they can to try to save their energy for the game.
Man, I love that. I love that idea a whole lot. Well, there's no better place when you're in a stretch like this just to relax and unwind a little bit, let things go, than 4 days in Manhattan. And Jen Langosch joining us from Manhattan. Thanks so much for the time, and just enjoy the rest and the peace and the tranquility of New York City.
Well, thanks, Dave. It's always good talking with you.
Carrie, never dull moments. What do you make of this latest deal, the Cubs trading Wellington Castillo to the Mariners?
Well, the number one thing it does is it makes it a lot easier for manager Joe Maddon. He had quite a log jam in terms of carrying three catchers and trying to keep everybody happy and also trying to get at bats and maneuvering on the bench. I mean, it was just a matter of time, really, before they were going to have to move one of them, and Wellington was the guy to go. If Wellington had continued to hit the way he did at the end of the 2013 season, they wouldn't have felt the need to go out and get Miguel Montero or to help that position. So it's a good move for Welly. He should be able to play more, I hope. All I know about the pitcher they got is that hard thrower, a little bit of command issues, which is probably why he's headed to AAA to begin and not joining the big league team right away. But it's a late-inning kind of guy, potential to be a closer, so that could work. But the Cubs, this is something we've been waiting for a move pretty much since spring training started, and they added Montero and Ross, so I guess today was the day.
All right, yeah, interesting. Always maneuvering, and the Cubs have been playing well lately. Just finished off a nice little win streak, finishing up a series with the Pirates. And yet it does seem like there's just constant movement. And can you help us understand everything going on in the rotation these days and bullpen? Because their body's moving all over the place.
Right. There should be some more roster moves at the start of their road trip in San Diego. They're expecting to move. Travis Wood will go from the rotation to the bullpen. Wood just has been scuffling a little bit in the rotation, so they're going to try this. He made one relief appearance over the weekend. Who did they play? Come on, Kerry. Pirates, against the Pirates, yeah. And did okay. What that will also do is that they're going to bring up Tsuyoshi Wada, who has been on a rehab assignment at Iowa. Part of that is because the timing is up for Wada. He's made his obligatory time down there. He's also pitched really well. What's interesting with Wada is they brought him into Chicago for a little tune-up with the pitching coach, and he went back to Iowa, and after that was just really solid. So whatever pitching coach Chris Bosio told him, it was translated perfectly. So that helped a lot. The other moves are that they're going to designate Phil Koch for assignment. He really hadn't been very effective. You could kind of tell the writing was on the wall in their 12-inning game against the Pirates when Koch was the only pitcher they didn't use. So it just hadn't worked out. And they do have plenty of lefties with the late addition of James Russell and also with Wood now going to the pen, and they really like Zach Roscoe. I know fans are going to cringe at that because he's been Roscoe's been kind of up and down, but if he can get on track, he can be really, really, really good. Let's see, what else are we going to do? The Cubs are going to also add a couple guys to the bench. Junior Lake is expected to join the team. That gives them another outfielder. And there's going to be one more roster move, and that's going to be a surprise for later.
What's motivating all of the shuffling that we're seeing? And is this the type of thing Cubs fans can settle in and get used to seeing? A lot of moving parts.
Well, I think it's just they're trying to find the right combination. And one thing that Maddon and the management have said from day one is that you're not going to finish the season with the same 25 that you started the season. I think everybody in baseball knows that. It's going to take a lot of different bodies to sort of get them to where they want to go. They're trying to find the right combinations. And it's just going to keep the transition wire happy.
Well, five games over 500 right now, and I get it. They haven't been perfect by any stretch, but five games over 500, playing well and really closing some ground on the St. Louis Cardinals.
Helps that the Cardinals lost a couple some games. Sometimes you think the Cardinals are never going to lose. So,
well, not only have they lost a couple of games, Terry. Let's face it, the Cardinals, as great a start as they've had, they have some flaws too. And I'm sure Cubs fans are getting very amped up. about the possibilities and a lot of the promises they're seeing, particularly in the young guys. What's the upside, the ceiling on this season? Do you suspect?
What's the upside on the?
Yeah, the upside, or maybe a ceiling for this team this year. I mean, the Cardinals up to that great start, but you know, Cubs fans are going to start getting pretty crazy with their enthusiasm. Is this a division they can win?
I'm not going to go that far because I still think it's. I guess I'm of the belief that it's still early. I think the Pirates are pretty good and cannot be discounted. And the Cardinals, the interesting thing to me to watch with the Cardinals is whether or not they can survive without Wainwright. I mean, not losing Adam Wainwright for the season is a huge blow. They lose the one guy who they could count on to go out there and give him a lot of innings and be the stopper and be the ace. And they may have gotten over it. They've been able to adjust in the beginning, but I can see how that might down the road be a little bit of an issue. Cub fans, I know, are giddy. I can't stop that. I can't control that. I would just say just relax. You know, Aaron Rodgers, RELAX. You know, but let's see how this plays out. There's still a long way to go. It's a long season, and I'm just kind of curious to see how it develops.
Yeah, all right. Well, you know, so far so good. The good news is it's been a pretty decent start, at least to this point. What about Chris Coughlin? Numbers just haven't been there yet offensively for him. Concerns internally about the production?
Not at all. And I think mainly because anybody who's watched him knows that the biggest problem is just bad luck. He's just hitting balls right at people. Really frustrating for him, but I don't see that 194 is that he's hitting is going to stay at that point. The good thing for Coughlin is that he's been reunited with a hitting coach, John Mailey, who he knew from Florida with the Marlins, and I think that will help him a lot get settled. And again, I think it's just kind of weird to watch, but he really hits the ball well. He just, unfortunately, he hits it right at people. We just have to get the defenders to cooperate a little bit, move over.
Yeah, well, bad aim. You know,
work on your aim a little bit. Yeah.
There's certainly a great trend right now for the team. I mean, they have, you know, as we mentioned, coming off the big win streak, playing a lot better baseball overall. Looking ahead at the schedule for this team, I mean, the Cardinals are in the middle of a very difficult stretch. You guys are out west for the moment, but then after a short homestand, go out east for a three-city trip. The schedule coming up look a little daunting. I mean, look, everybody's going to have to deal with it, I guess.
That, right, and the Cubs have played better on the West Coast in recent years. And they seem to really like, ever since they opened up the bleachers, the left field and the center field bleachers, I mean, that shoot for them to just lose one game on that homestand is pretty good. So going back home to Wrigley will be nice. The weather will be a little warmer, we hope. And then out east. You know, the team, what I'm kind of interested to see is how they're going to handle the American League teams. I mean, they've got some tough assignments with Detroit coming up. You know, the White Sox always play them tough, but that's interleague play, and that's a little further down the road. But you start projecting ahead and think, okay, how are they going to handle that? And they get to play the Dodgers. They got a tough stretch and toward the end of June with the Dodgers and the Cardinals, so that'll be interesting. But I guess I'm more day-to-day kind of person. You know, well, how are we going to get through today? And let's deal with the Padres right now.
Yeah, well, you will for three straight days, late nights out on the West Coast. Kerry Muscat, as always, thanks for joining us and keeping us up to date on the Cubs.
Very good. Thank you.
And Tom, the Pirates, you know, two games under 500 is you and I are having this conversation, middle of the pack in the National League Central. It's funny because I talked to so many other teams, and there is still a great deal of respect for this Pirates team. They know that pitching is there. You know that there's so much talent in the McCutchens and Harrisons, et cetera, on this lineup. The real story, though, appears to be emerging at the shortstop position for this club.
Well, yes, Jung Ho Kang is becoming somebody that you can't remove from the lineup. First couple of weeks, you know, we didn't see too much of him. But it was by design. They brought him along slowly, and he kind of popped up, had a couple of big pinch hits. Then as a regular, he started to get some, you know, contributing both offensively and defensively. And right now, you know, Clint Hurdle will never say that he's got a new starting shortstop. He doesn't want to totally phase out Jordan Mercer. But, you know, as far as what's actually been happening on the field, this past road trip, Kang made most of the starts. And he kind of basically right now is, you know, he's got the hot bat. So you, for the time being, we can say that Hurdle simply is playing his hot hand. But we'll have to see, you know, going forward, how that playing time is going to play out.
Now, the thinking probably was more like next year would be his big year, right?
Well, pretty much. It was really interesting because right in spring training, they talked about Kang. When I say they, you know, Hurdle and GM Neil Huntington as a regular, looking forward, let's say, to 2016. But obviously, all three of his positions, third, short, and second, you know, Pirates have incumbent starters there. So even when they identified him as a regular in the short run, you kind of had to wonder, you know, how they were going to make that work. And the obvious conclusion to reach was that between now and next season, they'll move somebody to open up a spot for Kang in 2016. But he kind of stepped up his own timetable by adjusting to major leagues maybe a lot quicker than they anticipated him doing so. So the situation that they figured they would face in 2016, they're facing relatively early this season. You know, how to accommodate him and how to make the other guys. Well, obviously, it's been Jordan Mercer, maybe, but he's played some third base as well. You know, Harrison made a couple starts in left field. So now accommodating Kang has kind of become a present dilemma, not a future dilemma.
Yeah, and that's not a, you know, those aren't, I kind of like it when things work out that way, right? Because the one concern you have when you're dealing with prospective starters, big, you know, big pieces for the future is you just, I feel like sometimes we get hamstrung over the notion of when is it time to bring them up? Is it too early? You don't want to overwhelm a guy. You want to make sure they're prepared. Well, this has happened somewhat organically, right? I mean, and it's just sort of happened that, well, you know, maybe he was ready a little earlier than we thought. And that being the case, well, what the heck, right? You know, maybe now you have different options this year that you wouldn't have otherwise had.
Well, exactly. And Hurdle himself, as tough a decision as he may be facing on a daily basis now between those two, he said that nothing makes the manager happier than to have three players. Well, when I said three, I'm including Harrison in the threesome. You have three players producing, and you have to decide which two to play on any particular day. It's a lot easier decision to make than when you got players not producing, and you have to figure out which is the least weakness to put out there, so to speak. So I mean, Hurdle likes the challenge of having you know, three players who are producing, and it's up to him to decide which two play on any particular day. You know, the interesting dynamic on this is, I'm not saying this is going to happen, but the one guy who's got the versatility perhaps to break that long jam, once again, is Josh Harrison, who, you know, up until pretty late last season, kind of rotated all around, outfield, a little second base, little third base. He's the one guy that you could maneuver around the other two. So I'm not saying that he's going to go back to that utility role. But, you know, he's the one guy that's got the flexibility to maybe accommodate both Mercer and Kang. You know, Kang plays third, Mercer plays short, and Harrison pulls down some time in the outfield. So there's a lot of moving parts in this, no question.
Well, certainly one part of that right now is that you want Josh Harrison's bat in there somewhere. I mean, he's really been swinging it lately. McCutchen has certainly picked things up quite a bit. It looks like the offense might be showing a little bit of life.
Oh, yes, it has. It's a little bit out of sync. A real oddity. I noted this the other day. You know, when they had that four-game losing streak, McCutcheon, Harrison, and Starling Marte hit the heck out of the ball, and that four-game winning streak immediately before the losing streak, none of those three were producing. So that was basically, offense was out of sync. But obviously, that they might try to have them hitting, they're not hitting, and you still got a couple, quiet links, not to call them weak links, but Pedro Alvarez hasn't really done too much with the bat since the first couple of weeks. And, Gregory Polanco is going through some kind of funk, as I'm sure fans are aware of.
Yeah, well, yeah, I don't think they have to be reminded of certain of these things. And you do look back, offensively here, you scored 10 runs in Friday's game at Chicago and lose that one, another walk-off loss, which has been an epidemic this year for the Pirates. But outside of that, man, I tell you what, it's a lot of 1-2 and 3-run games, it seems like. And their pitching's great, but man, I just don't know how much longer or how long they feel like they can really lean that heavily on their pitching.
Well, exactly. I mean, because the pitching has been a little bit better than they expected it to be, certainly in the early going. Once again, it gets us back to that out of sync factor. Lose games 2-1, 3-2, and 11-10. But I think if anything, their rotation might get even stronger once Charlie Morton comes back. He looks really ready to merge in. Has some very solid rehab starts, and he's going to rejoin the rotation in the latter half of this homestand. Vance Worley seems to be the one who's out. He already is in the bullpen because they don't need a fifth starter until later in this homestand. And if anything, even Francisco Liriano, we've got the bit of a thing about him not winning because of not getting enough run support, but that's not really true. He really hasn't hit his stride yet either. So once he gets going and AJ and Cole maintain the level at which they're pitching and you get Morton back in, your rotation might get even better than it's shown the first 6 weeks. So if they get that, hitting going on a consistent basis, essentially you've had half the lineup hitting, each time, but not the whole lineup hasn't really clicked. Once that gets going, this team can really take off.
I almost hate to ask this question, Tom, because you mentioned A.J. Burnett. I mean, can he really keep up the pace at which he's been pitching this year? He's been outstanding.
Well, he has. We expected him to not be able to keep up that pace after his first two starts, but now he's got it going through eight. It's a really remarkable development. It's seeing a totally different Burnett, but a very efficient Burnett, not striking out many people, which has been his game. But I would think that if you ask Burnett whether he wishes he would have altered his approach several years ago, he might say, "Yeah, I wish I would have thought of this earlier." He's simply focused on keeping the ball down, letting his defense work, and not so concerned about punching people out, which, pretty much had been his, calling card. And the results have been really remarkable. I mean, every time he goes out, he gives him seven innings, no more than one or two runs allowed. And there's no reason why he can't keep it up. It's a remarkable transformation. It's fun to see.
Yeah, it's been real fun to see. And hard to believe in his career, with everything that he's experienced and done, he might be looking at his first All-Star appearance this year, but he's had some kind of first half so far. Tom, he might be the only guy who's had a better first half than you. As always, thanks.
I know about that, yeah.
As always, joined by Adam McAlvey, like I say, embedded with the Milwaukee Brewers and following this team through what has been a very difficult start to the season. Now, Adam, you've seen a number of reasons why that may be, but one of them has been offensively the team struggled early. Brian Braun's looked a lot better lately. You've written a bit about it. What is it? What's happened for Braun that has gotten him back on track?
Yeah, Dave, he's been pretty encouraged for a while now, even before the numbers started to reflect it, by a couple of things. Number one, his hard hit ball rate has been the highest of his career from the start of the season, even when his batting average was down, 220, 230. And his batting average on balls in play was really low, the lowest of his career. So those two things don't go together. He's hitting balls really hard. His BABIP is really low. He said it was impossible for that to continue. So I think that's one of the reasons he was able to stay pretty positive through it. And now, you know, lo and behold, beginning on that last homestand, the statistics have started to look a little bit better. He's on a good RBI run. He's hitting some home runs. He says all along he's felt healthy, that it hasn't been a matter of that thumb that gave him trouble last year. Basically, his theory is that it was just bad luck. Now, bad luck for the team that it happened in a time where they really could have used their best hitter to come through and win a couple of games for him. You know, there were obviously, as you referenced, a lot more problems than just this one guy. But, you know, his struggles came at a or bad luck, whatever you want to call it, came at a particularly bad time for the team.
You think the, you know, the reference to some of those statistical numbers, right, the BABIP, the hard hit ball rate, all these types of things. Now, you know, everybody has access to that information anymore, and it's so much more common and a part of the conversation. But in the case of Bron in particular, do you think that's the type of thing that, you know, that he goes and looks up? Because, you know, these guys know. I mean, they remember it bad to a bad. He knows he's hit the ball hard. He's just not getting any luck. Does he go and look at that information, maybe just to kind of quiet his own demons in there about what's going on? Or is that the kind
well,
of thing
I'll tell
that maybe
you,
the front office points out?
In this case, it was pointed out to him by someone close to him who had read an article of someone else who had looked up the numbers, and he brought it to my attention. So it's a combination. But, you know, I'll tell you, it was one thing that gave him, you know, it made him feel good. And I think that all these different players, you can look at a guy who's in a tough patch, and they can go and, you know, the beauty of statistics is, you know, you can read them as you want. And you can find some statistics probably to give you a little bit of confidence. And confidence is a big part of this game. I mean, the former Brewers manager, Ron Renneke, would talk about confidence all the time. That you get to this level and everybody has a certain ability, and it's just a matter of squeezing as much of that ability out onto the field as you can. And a lot of that has to do with being in a good frame of mind. So I'll tell you the flip side. Scooter Gennett, their second baseman, who, as we speak, is on his way back down to the minor leagues. They optioned him out a bit amid a terrible streak. You know, his numbers are really bad, and he looks up at the scoreboard, and it's a batting average in the 160, 150 range. But even he can find numbers that he likes. His strikeout rate has been really low, so that means he's been putting balls in play. Then, you know, of course, with the batting average that low, his BABIP is going to be really low. So he can point to some things and say, well, it's just a stretch of bad luck. I need to keep swinging. And I think that all these guys up and down can turn to the statistics now for, you know, for good and bad. And there's so many numbers that can be overloaded. You just got to decide what you want to focus on.
Yeah, I guess that's why I asked. Because I do think, especially when you're talking about somebody with Ryan Braun's track record, you know, sometimes you might need to put together a little case to help him understand, dude, you're all right. You know, just keep doing what you do, because, I mean, there's so much doubt and negativity that can creep into a guy's head. I just think it's a good, positive way to use those numbers. Now, Scooter, that's a different example, right? Because here's a guy who does, you know, he just doesn't have the track record of Ryan Braun. Though his first 2 years have been very positive. And obviously, he's not going to get quite the leash either, as he's been sent out. What do they want him to do? How long do they think this is going to take for him to get straightened out again?
Well, it's just going to be a matter of going down to get some confidence. I mean, this is the classic option a guy out to take some of the pressure off. And Scooter Gennett said he'd fallen into some of the bad traps that can catch a hitter when he's struggling, which is basically you try to pull everything. And he says, you know, he used a great old Tony Plush phrase. He said he needs to tickle a couple balls over the shortstop, meaning the opposite way, and he'd be okay again and get out of some of those bad habits. But, you know, for him, you talk about track record, and it's true. He doesn't have a long track record in the major leagues. This is the first season where he's been the everyday guy. He's been basically kind of in a loose platoon with Ricky Weeks the previous 2 years. But he does have a track record in professional baseball, and Craig Counsell, their manager, talked about that. I mean, this guy, there's no doubt that this guy hit. Every level, he hits around 300. So there's that. It's not as if this guy has forgotten how to hit. He's just gotten into a bad funk, and he happens to play for a team where they can't afford that, and they're really trying hard to win every game. You know, this new manager council talks very basic terms about how he's managing this team and constructing lineups and making bullpen decisions. It's how do we win a game today? They are not yet thinking about the long term and all those other things that maybe will come up down the line. Right now it's try to win games, try to get somewhat unburied from what happened to them in the start of the season. So, you know, Scooter Gennett is a young guy with options, and they have some other infielders that they can play that position. They opted, you know, let's go ahead and make a move and try to get his swing back and get his confidence back up.
Yeah, I still think that's a, with all due respect to all these guys who have track records in the minor leagues, it's the only way you really get this far. The guys who is different. It's just different at this level sometimes. Sometimes I think that's
well, and you're right, and he knows that, you know, and he talked, and when we had a chance to sort of talk to him about this, this is the first time he's gone through something like this at the big league level, because Scooter Gennett came up and he hit kind of from the beginning with this Brewers team. So this is it is definitely a new experience, and you have to kind of fight those urges to try to do more. He went through, he said something like this at high A, but look, even, you know, he's reasonable enough to know that that's a completely different animal than doing it in the major leagues. So he, you know, there was something to be said for, you know, the pressure being on a little bit. And I think the idea here is to try to ease that and get him back. I mean, he's still a part of what they want to do for the future. This is a left-handed bat that they like. And like you've said, it's a 300 hitter. So he can play. He can hit. He's going to try to go down there and break some of these habits.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you mentioned Council a little bit ago. And you know, they, by and large, played pretty well under him, at least in terms of the wins and losses. And I'll be darned if he didn't pull out the old pitcher batting eighth thing the other day with Kyle Loesch. I mean, everybody's doing it, right? Everyone wants to tinker with it now and then, but it worked out pretty well. I was just interested in how long it had been since Milwaukee had done that and what he's thinking. I mean, with Loesch in particular, is he the only one maybe, or is this something he might tinker with some other guys?
Well, they did it. They did it for that whole Mets series. He would not commit to doing it for, you know, the next month. My understanding of batting the pitcher eighth is you want to do it over a large sample, because the idea is you generate kind of that second leadoff hitter with a guy down at the bottom for the guys at the top. And in the Brewers' case, that's Carlos Gomez hitting leadoff now again, who's you know, he can be a run producer. They juggle whether to bat him first or batted him cleanup some in that last homestand. So he, as a run-producing type guy, it's nice to have as many runners on base as you can for the second, third, fourth time through the lineup, and that's kind of what they're thinking here. And as far as when they had done it had been since 2010. It was Ned Yost, the last manager, who did it with Randy Wolf as the pitcher. And, you know, it's always a matter of personnel. You have to have the right leadoff guy and really two-hole hitter, which in the Brewers' case, when Jonathan Lucroy is healthy, with Gomez and Lucroy, they'll have run-producing types in those spots. And then you have to have the right sort of nine-hole hitter where it makes sense. And for the Brewers, that the last couple of days, it was Luis Sardinas, a short switch-hitting shortstop who they got in the Giovanni Gallardo trade, who's up with the Brewers for the first time and getting an opportunity to play. Young guy, you know, maybe power will come eventually, but he's not a power hitter right now. He's more of a get-on-base kind of guy. And he did get on base in that series. So the early returns were good. But, you know, really on a day-to-day basis, that is sort of flipping the, you know, rolling the dice a little bit, flipping a coin, because you just don't know which day that eighth spot's going to come up in a position where, oh, I wish we had a real hitter here, or the other days where it, you know, where it works out for you. But over the long term, again, this is at least my understanding, over the long term, this is supposed to basically produce more runs. And again, that's what Craig Council is going for right now. How do we win today?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I always think it's interesting. I always kind of like it. And the shocker to me as we wrap this up was that it had been so long, because with Gallardo, I mean, you could have batted him sixth. You know, Walter Olson used to do that with Don Drysdale. He batted him seventh back in the day. But we're going to get off on too long a tangent on that one, I'm afraid.
Great stuff, man. I always appreciate it, Adam. Interesting team to keep an eye on as they continue to shuffle the deck a little bit and try and figure things out. But we'll see. We'll see what next week brings. Thanks for the time.
All right, Dave.
And as always, close coverage of the Cincinnati Reds. And Mark, look, here's the deal. I look back at the previous weekend series against the San Francisco Giants. And I know we're talking about the defending world champs. They've won three of the last five World Series. I get it. And the Reds haven't gotten off to a good start. So the fact that the Giants might sweep the Reds, that's one thing. But the fact that they scored 30 runs in 3 days, because I just don't think of the Giants as that potent an offense, and I think the numbers to this point in the season would bear that out, that is what would concern me.
Well, I'll tell you what, the Giants and the Reds had the same exact record going into the four-game series, and boy, the Giants looked like a lot better team those last three games. The Reds won the first game, and they looked pretty good. They felt like they're having some momentum coming out of the Atlanta series. And then Kerplatt, 30 runs in three games. Really, it all came down to the starting pitching didn't have it. You got three straight outings of less than five innings. The one surprise, I guess, would be Mike Leake, who had only one run allowed in 22 innings, comes out and gets hammered and gives up nine earned runs. Descalfani's been struggling lately. Marquis has been struggling lately. So, of course, that led to the short outings, to longer bullpen outings, which is not something they wanted to do. So it's been a mess of a weekend for them.
But an off day on Monday, I'm sure that was a welcome one. And then two quick games in Kansas City, although, again, another team coming off quite a season and maybe not playing too poorly. So, you know, it never seems to let up. But overall, again, I feel like we always come back to the same place, Mark. Here are the Reds at 18-20. I mean, that's not the type of thing where one would necessarily push a panic button. I think there's a sense that they've got to be a better team than that. Does the frustration just continue to build? Is there a sense maybe that they're seeing signs of climbing out of it? What is the general sense?
There's no frustration other than the idea of losing. Of course, they don't like that, but you don't get the sense of abandonship or things like that. It's not like these guys are sitting around just kind of already ready to write off the season, and that's nothing like that at all. I mean, they're only, like you said, 18-20. The National League has not been the most dynamic league this season. There's a lot of teams that are kind of treading water and sitting around 500 or just above it, and so they are very much in it, and they're in third place in their division. So it's not that, but at the same time, there is a recognition, especially by the manager, that some things that they've been doing through this first month plus that haven't been working had to be addressed. And, you know, you're past the point now where it's, well, okay, we've given a look at these certain guys that are struggling and getting past that it's early part, and now they're into the they should be better or we have to change something part. And they did that with Kevin Gregg. They moved him out. They did it yesterday with Billy Hamilton. They decided that leadoff wasn't working out, and they decided to put a stronger hitter and on-base percentage guy up at the top, and they move Hamilton to eighth. So I think they're not afraid to start mixing things up a little bit to try to find the right combination, because they do know that they can't just get away like this the rest of the way.
Yeah, you mentioned the Billy Hamilton move, dropping him to eighth in the order, and I know some managers, I feel like sometimes they tiptoe into these things, right? They don't want to upset anybody. They want to keep, you know, and you worry about guys' psyches. You don't want to send the wrong message or you know, I guess force guys into pressing kinds of situations. But how's Hamilton dealt with it? How long have they been sort of, you know, leaning this way with him? It does clearly look like the right move, at least at this point of the season.
Didn't get the sense of how long it's been in the works, but definitely Hamilton, talking to him yesterday, he was fine with it. He said, I can't really complain about it. Look how I'm hitting. And he understood, and he's hoping maybe in some ways the pressure of leading off will be alleviated by batting eighth. He'll not have to worry about taking pitches. He can kind of do the things that he's comfortable doing. And if nothing else, you know, a lot of eighth hitters generally get pitched around so they can get to the pitcher, but you don't really want to pitch around Billy Hamilton and put him on first base. So that's a possibility. He might get some better pitches to hit. And then we'll just see. It's not a one day or a you know, 1 week scenario right now. He's the ace hitter going forward, and right now Zach Kozar's the leadoff hitter, so that's something they're going to miss with for the you know, at least for the time being.
And you're seeing, and they're seeing some signs that maybe Jay Bruce is going to maybe start to click a little bit.
It would seem that way. It's of course his numbers, the batting average especially is terrible. It's below 200, well below 200, and that's not good. But at the same time, he's had going the last few days some really not only good at bats, but just some good contact. He came close to two grand slams in the last few days. He had two home runs on Saturday, one on Sunday. He's hitting better. He's drawing some more walks. He's second on the team in walks. So there are some positive signs. And just talking to him, you know, more than once this last few days, he says he doesn't feel any different than before. Like last year, of course, he was going through the knee thing and clearly wasn't himself, but he can't use that as an excuse this year, and he's not. And he just says he really has no excuse for why he's been hitting poorly. And he's hoping, though, like everyone else on the team, that what they've seen on Sunday and Saturday to some extent is a sign of things to come.
Gosh, you know, I mean, they're basically a middle-of-the-pack team in the National League offensively. And, you know, up until recently, Marlon Byrd hadn't contributed a whole lot there in that first month. He's caught fire. You know, the numbers up and down, other, Votto's producing, you know, Phillips is, you know, putting up decent numbers. Cozart's look good. I mean, if Bruce gets going, if Hamilton's more comfortable in the eighth spot in the order, I mean, this is an offense that could produce.
Well, it should. I mean, Votto hasn't been is 100% himself. On Sunday, he had a little blooper. That was his first extra base hit of the month. So that's not typical for him. You'd like to see, if you're the Reds, Votto driving the ball the gaps and getting his doubles and, of course, hitting some home runs once in a while. That would be what they'd like to see. But, you know, Cozart's been, despite the wrist injury he had, he's been really hot. Like Marlon Byrd has just taken off. So, yes, there are possibilities for the offense to do some things, but they obviously have to keep themselves in the games better with the pitching staff so they can all kind of work in harmony.
Yeah, well, yeah, no doubt that has been a major issue. What about the Devin Mesoraco drama? Where is this story now?
Well, this could be a very pivotal week. I talked to him the other day, and of course, with the interleague play coming up in Kansas City and Cleveland, they get to use the DH again. More than likely, he'll be the DH, so he'll have a chance to hit regularly. But he told me he planned on giving catching a shot on the side this week. It'd be the first time he's ever really gone in the crouch since April 11th, so it's been almost 40 days or so. He's gonna give it a shot, and if it does work, they'll keep trying some more and eventually practice enough so that he could catch in a game. If it doesn't work and he knows immediately that it's a no-go, he'll probably elect for the surgery because he realizes, of course, that he can't be a pinch hitter the rest of the year. That's just not going to work. They want to get him ready for next year if that's the case.
Yeah, boy. And then, you know, you've touched on the pitching a little bit, but I guess a little setback for Manny Parra and then just the really disappointing news about Marshall. Done for the year?
Yeah, it's... You feel bad for him. He's a guy that's always made the effort and is a good guy, and he's worked hard to try to come back from the last shoulder surgery. And I really, of course, when you deal with a shoulder surgery, you don't expect guys, you can't automatically expect them to come back and be 100% right out of the gate. And you kind of got the signs that he hadn't been around much, so that you wondered if he wasn't making much progress. And I asked recently if he had been throwing, and I was told he hadn't been. And then, of course, we get this news that he needs surgery on Wednesday. It's going to end the season, and it's the capsule that's torn, which is really bad news. It's going to be very hard for him to come back from that. But you know, you wish him the best and see what happens.
Yeah. Well, as always, a lot going on around the Cincinnati Reds. Just two games under 500, and now a little American League road trip for them. Hey, Mark Sheldon, great stuff, man. Enjoy the week, and we'll do it again in about 7 days.
Excellent, Dave. Thank you.
And there you go, another busy week in the National League Central. Thank you for listening. MLB.com Extras, National League Central Edition.